This is Gaten the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Gaten the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode, I bring you a bit of a different episode. Often on the podcast, I have discussed animation and I've tried to analyze different animations that I really enjoy in relation to fighting, for example, and I've also kind of discussed it in a bit more of a general context. But in today's episode, I want to look closely at a production that I'm really passionate about, and that is Fire Force. I think there's no better time as one, a podcaster, and secondly, as an anime fan and an animation fan to talk about this almost spectacular production that David Production has managed to put on, especially since season 2 has now been released. When this is being recorded, there is only one episode of season 2. However, when this is being dropped, the second episode should be out around then. So what I want to discuss is a few of the staff which have really contributed a lot to this work. Sadly, I won't be able to mention all of them, but I'll be talking about that. I'll be talking about how the direction features, or how the direction really works well with their contributions and their animation styles, etc. If you do enjoy this episode, it would be very appreciated if you left it a review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you do get your podcasts. And so here is the episode for this week, that is episode 52 of Gaten the Mecha, analyzing the animation of Fire Force. As always do, I give you my alerts for this episode before we continue and get into the analysis, and the first alert, obviously, is a spoiler warning for season 1 of Fire Force. It's not my intention to talk heavily about the plot, as this is a much more animation and art focused episode. However, I may mention some things that you may not be interested in because you haven't seen this season yet. Also, I'm going to be speaking primarily about the first season because most of the content comes from the first season. There's only been one episode so far, season 2, and although it was spectacular and there are loads of things to talk about, I think it would be most suitable to talk about where most of the content is, as this is something which seems to be rather continuous when it comes to its staff and their styles. They haven't really changed that much since the first season, according to the episode so far, and so I want to only discuss mostly the content of season 1 versus season 2. Previously on the podcast, I've looked rather a bit in detail at fighting Sakuga. In that episode, if you haven't checked it out, I would definitely recommend it. I looked at Fire Force, I looked at My Hero Academia, and I looked at Fate Grand Order, Absolute Demonic Front Babylonia, very long name. And I've also looked at Sakuga and animation conceptually. What is it, and how do these animations look so great, or at least how do they achieve their function in bringing these amazing themes into play? But when I was doing those analyses, I was very concerned about more of what was happening within the animations versus who was behind them. Now that I've completed the show and I've referenced staff on the good old Sakuga Bureau and done all the research that I've needed to do, I think it's a much better way to do it in this format and deliver my understanding of said shots or cuts or whatever, now that I know or I have a better idea of what the production has to offer. And with that being said, the format of this episode will be slightly different to usual. Most of my episodes, it ends up being a few bullet points on what I think about said topic for the episode. And that will still be the same. However, these almost quote-unquote bullet points which I'll be discussing for these animation analyses when I do these will be almost divided by staff, or I've put the staff which I want to discuss into categories. So imagine these imaginary bullet points are based on people or the almost type of people they are versus, say, themes or just different talking points. And my final sort of alert before we go on is that I do want to make it clear that I will try to get everything correct. I say try with a lot of emphasis. I'll try to get everything correct as of when this is being recorded. Obviously, we have things where some artists or animators aren't known yet for said shots or cuts. And also when we have more animators confirming, saying that they've done said shots or things get mixed up or confused. But just know that when this is being recorded, it is my greatest intention to try and get this right. And if there is something which I am saying which is evidently wrong and it can be proven wrong, then by all means, feel free to critique and correct this episode. You can do that through the Get in the Mecha contact information that will be in the description for this episode. And so let us begin analyzing the animation and production that is Fire Force. I think there are two very important things to establish when we look at Fire Force as an anime. When we look at it being a production as opposed to a piece of writing or a text. And the two things which I thought were probably of utmost importance are, one, its direction, and secondly, what the anime genuinely concerns. Again, more from the production standpoint or what the writing converts into. Firstly, to address its direction, Season 1 is animated by Yuki Yase, and in my opinion, Yase's direction is heavily focused upon momentum, and Fire Force as a whole, in regards to his writing, is heavily based off momentum anyway. The arcs have this very similar, at least according to Season 1, have these very similar build-ups, and then eventually when all these events sort of come together, they overflow with momentum or they overflow with intensity, and then that is almost diffused by some sort of fight scene or conflict between one character and another. This momentum is very important, and we'll see it throughout this episode, how these animators fit into that very vision, this momentum-esque, if you want to call it that, vision for this show. And footnote, it is good to establish that Yuki Yase is not directing Fire Force Season 2, he has only done Season 1, and in fact, the director for Season 2 at the moment is Tatsuma Minamikawa. And then the second part, which is what it concerns, and how does this convert into a production? Fire Force, as the name implies, and this will sound basic, but as it implies, the show is based around fire, it is centralized around fire. And as a result, how this converts is that the show is very centric around one type of effect. When I say effect, I don't necessarily mean a computer-generated effect as we usually talk about when we talk about 3D animation. By effect, I just mean an asset or component that aren't the characters themselves necessarily. And so Fire Force is based around very few effects. It's based around fire, it's based around smoke, it's based around ash. And occasionally we have a few things like lightning, and you can categorize explosions in there as well. However, explosions kind of are a combination of the previous effects which we discussed. So explosions being fire, ash, smoke, and those sorts of things, and heat, I guess. But how do you really animate heat is another question. But Fire Force is very centralized around three very important effects when it comes to its combat and when it comes to its scenery, and everything is around this very concept. And so it is for this reason that our animators have to slot both into Yuki Yase's vision of momentum, although this isn't necessarily a stated vision, this more of an observed vision, which I feel as if Fire Force is based on. This could be also just a thing in regards to writing as well from the mangaka himself, but I just mean it in terms of how it feels and appears as a viewer. It feels momentum based, and so our key animators need to slot into that, and also adjust the idea that most of what they will be animating will be concentrated around these very few effects, but that doesn't mean that few effects means less versatility. If anything, it's their job or role to make this more versatile and avoid monotony. Obviously, the fact that I am talking about this in almost high praise means that I do believe that they have this skill set and talent to do so. The key animators which I will be speaking about today are challenged with making or bringing some character to this piece. And you would think that although it is true, and I agree that Fire Force would on the surface seem like an anime which is, well, production which is very focused upon having its art and animation in unity. Not to say that consistency is something which is almost, it doesn't need to be said, almost every work should be pretty consistent unless it's for some sort of intended effect, but Fire Force has that consistency. But its main intention is to add character to this very one effect, to again avoid monotony. Fire Force has a lot of big risk or potential to be bland, and it's a shame that there are some productions out there which have this very same challenge, or at least have a similar sort of challenge to overcome, and they fall for this very trap of monotony because it's based around very few things. There's one in my head which I won't say for the sake of not being cancelled, but I have a few in my head which I can see that being a thing, but Fire Force I think manages to dodge that very bullet. Sadly, I won't be able to speak about every animator that I wanted to in this episode, and I might as well just give out a few names. We have Matsuo, we have Hirohara, we have Reiki Matsura, we have Yasuyuki Hai, and there are so many which I could have spoken about, but I want to try and focus on a few and really nail what they love rather than speak about all of them, and then I'll be kind of giving you guys a bit of an impartial or very limited look at the production. So it's a shame, I wanted to speak about so many more key animators on this project, but sadly I won't be able to do it. It's not an attempt to devalue them or say that they're subpar to the others, because some of these animators I think have work which really stand out in this piece. And so to look at these animators and their contributions, I've divided them into three categories. I've put them into the bread and butter category, which I'll explain them all, but the bread and butter category, the high impact / flashy category, and then finally the situational category. And so let's start off with the core of it all, which is bread and butter. The bread and butter category, in summary, is really the animators which I think made or helped really craft and push the identity of Fire Force. This isn't to say that the others haven't contributed to that, but these two staff, which I will discuss in this category, I think animate the almost fundamental scenes. These are the scenes which are the ones which you see on Twitter quite often, but also, and not all of them, but these are the moments which are probably the peak of the momentum curve when we think of Fire Force and Yase's direction. These are usually the animators which wrap up the arcs or animate the key scenes which give us a really strong idea into the potential of our characters and the potential for this team as a whole. The first staff member I want to discuss is Kazuhiro Miwa. Miwa, when looking at Fire Force, is probably, to me, the one who has shaped the image the most. And when I say shaped, I don't particularly mean it in the almost outer for me in my sense, and how he's the almost entire creative vision of Fire Force. I don't have any information to prove that, and that isn't what I'm attempting to do. I'm not trying to say that Miwa is the entire reason for the design philosophy of the show, but it's many of these almost peak moments which I think can be dedicated to Miwa. I think the genius which comes from Kazuhiro Miwa's animations come from the very smart blend of smears and lines for emphasis. A very good way to spot Miwa or Miwa cuts within Fire Force. Although, okay, I have another method, and one of them was really, if you really couldn't think of a specific animator on the team, I would mostly guess Miwa, because of the fact that Miwa, as I said, is the foundation, or felt like the foundation of the team when it comes to these sorts of scenes. But I think a more reasonable way to spot Miwa would be these black lines for emphasis. These aren't something which are invented by said animator, but the way which they're used is one which I haven't seen a lot of versus a lot of the other anime which I've seen which contain combat. The way this is done is through combining smears and these black lines for emphasis. Again, none of these are new techniques. However, I think what was really interesting was how these were merged together. Smears aren't the only way of showing motion, but they're able to portray an object or arm or something in motion in itself. And I think combining these with these separate emphasis lines, which were literally merged together, really contributes towards making these very aggressive attacks. And a very good example of this would be the conclusion to the Vulcan's Workshop arc. The conclusion to the arc features Shinra basically flying through many of these white-clad members. And I really love this moment because Shinra seems really focused, he's really in the moment here, and we can tell that these attacks look really aggressive because of, again, Miwa's indicator, which is these black lines for emphasis. When Shinra attacks, it's not only his arms being smeared to pull the mask of some of these white-clad members or to kick into them, but these emphasis lines are used almost as an after-image at times when they're not being combined. And so by the time he's almost snatched one of the masks of one of the white clad members, those lines are still there. And that is a good and amazing way, I think, of portraying aggression. I would say personally that Kazuhiro Miwa is almost an all-rounder in my opinion when it comes to the series. It's not a competition between animators, and that's never my attempt to pit the two or pit the entire team against each other. It's a team effort when it comes to putting on a production like this. But I would say Miwa is an all-rounder because they've proven that they can do so many different things. Another great example with this in regards to the episode, being episode 17 in the Vulcan's Workshop arc, is how they're able to change the trajectory of the fire which is being used by Shinra. Often in Fire Force we have different fire effects, and I think it's very good, again, attention to detail, how Miwa is able to almost make this very thin yet smear it within because it's concentrated as Shinra is almost pushing his limits to get to the door. And so making these thin and smearing them within, I think, is a good example of this. And also in this episode, episode 17, the background animation is really strong as well. When we talk about background animation, we don't necessarily refer to the background itself. That might be done in-house, that might be done by another studio outsourced to them for the production. But background animation being the literal floor which is animated at the same time as Shinra flying through. And I think that takes a lot of skill as well. I've talked about it in regards to Shingo Yamashita when we look at Yozakura Quartet and then with Kaganeshi moment. But I really did like this version as well because it was short and sweet, but I think it was just a nice flex to show that I can do so many things at the same time. Similarly to how, as I mentioned before, Shingo Yamashita did that in Yozakura Quartet, and I think Miwa does a very similar thing in episode 17. But there's more, and I think this is proven also in episode 1. I think Kazuhiro Miwa puts on a very big show from the very beginning of the show all the way to the end. The thing about this episode versus episode 17 is that we see a very different Miwa in a good sense. Miwa in episode 1, I prefer it, but that versatility and the ability to adapt is something which is only praiseworthy. Episode 1 and almost all the things concerning it are completely different. The sense of urgency is different, although it's still there, there's still an enemy, but the sense of urgency in regards to the scene is still slightly different when it comes to Vulcan and everything else which is going on. There's also a CGI background in play in episode 1 versus episode 17, which is more because of the literal background and then the background animation done by Miwa himself. But because there's a CGI background in play, the aesthetic has to be almost changed or shifted so it doesn't look almost imposed onto the screen. It makes for a much more comfortable viewing experience in the way Miwa animates the both explosion and the fire, or Shinra. What I really appreciate is how the explosion which comes in this episode doesn't involve too much outlining. Outlining something which is very prominent throughout Fire Force, and there's no problem with doing it, but I think it also just shows detail to be able to use a lot less of it when necessary. And the explosion in episode 1 when Shinra is fighting that infernal looks really beautiful because, if anything, it's made by its shapes, or its structure is made by its almost plumes and smears within, as opposed to being dependent on an outline. And if anything, I think it looks better than most of the explosions which I've seen in other anime, because they're concentrated with thick lines around it, but without the lines, if anything, they look so beautiful. Also, when the fire and the explosion is moving around when Shinra is trying to weave past it in order to get to the enemy, the lack of outlining also continues as well, which is really beneficial for us as viewers, because we're able to concentrate, because it contrasts with Shinra's character model, or just Shinra as a whole, we're able to concentrate a lot more on Shinra's movements past the fire and past the explosion versus concentrating too much on the enemy's attack and how that's glaring at us. So overall, Kazuhiro Miwa, great animator, very able to adapt and adjust as they need to, as they are one of the main animators of the team, and is great at giving us these exceptional experiences every time in every arc. Now we move on to our second quote-unquote bread and butter animator, and that is Hiroyuki Okaji. Okaji, when I was looking and quote-unquote studying through Fire Force, they weren't an animator which I focused on too much, and that was primarily because they didn't have many fight scenes, and I do think it can be a bit cumbersome to analyze a 2-second close-up or a 5-second explosion. However, when looking into it a bit more, I've really looked at how Okaji manages to almost nuance the image of Fire Force and the effect that is fire. And now I've really come to appreciate their work in the series. Fire Force being an anime which is, as I've said, concentrated around this one effect and the distortion of one effect, how fire and ash and smoke are distorted by various animators to create an exciting experience. And I think Okaji manages to keep this in check, because when we have these multiple distortions of said effects, the main effects can be lost. The main image of fire can be lost, as fire is now seen as this beneficial thing for good, whereas the typical destructive image of fire, the sharp and scary look that fire is often given in other pieces of media, that can be lost in Fire Force at times, and Hiroyuki Okaji and their drawings and art and animation managed to really bring that back. Okaji manages to restore the depth and realism which comes with fire and explosions, and a good example of this would be in episode 5. Although I'm referencing episode 5, there are plenty of other episodes that do this, and Okaji is probably one of my favorite explosion animators at the moment. But the way these are achieved are through these very strong patterns between these what look like smoke onto ash that overlaps onto one another. Okaji uses shapes which are these almost arcs of smoke, although they do have these sharp edges and they're not drawn as perfect lines or arcs. There's still these arcs of smoke which almost expand in diameter as they fly further from the blast zone, or the zone where fire is really at. Another really good example as well would be the opening episode. Episode 1 sees Shino's house burning down after the fire which took his mother, as well as saw the disappearance of Sho. A lot of the shots with this, as well as the quote-unquote demon which is looking at him from his memories, a lot of these are Okaji's job to make menacing and look like something to be feared, as that is still what the core of fire is when we think of it conceptually. I really love how when we open in the episode, or when we open to that scene in the episode, we get these much more diagonal and sharp looks of fire, as opposed to the often, as I said, distorted and rounded look that fire is often given within the series. It reminds me of a lot of the fire you'd see in historical paintings, if we take, or oil paintings from stuff like the Great Fire of London and all those other sort of events that I can't think of right now. Fire is destructive, fire is hard hitting, it's something which can kill you and has killed many people within this series. And the way Okaji manages to draw fire and portray it within their cuts really creates this much more menacing image. So now let's move on to our second category, which is the quote-unquote flashy animators, or high-impact animators. When I say flashy, just to be clear, I do not mean flashy. Flashy isn't some sort of criticism, it's not some way of degrading their work. I think of flashy, although I know some people do use flashy as a criticism, I think flashy is a good thing. For a series like this, which really attempts to make its mark when it comes to stuff like Ignition of Fire and all those other sorts of things, I think it's very essential that flashy is there. And so our first animator on this quote-unquote flashy list is Yuki Sato. I like to think of Yuki Sato as almost the ace of Fire Force, not because I don't really think that it's fair to say who is the best animator. I have favorites, but the best is hard to say. But I think Sato is very responsible for some of these shifts in momentum when we look at the almost overall, or the style which seems to be the case when it comes to Yuki Sato. The way this seems to be achieved, in my opinion, is through these very bold and impactful impact frames. When I refer to impact frames, if you have seen all the episodes of Fire Force Season 1, you know that there are some moments which have these very bold black and white, or red and white, or red and black frames. A good example would be the near conclusion of the Asakusa arc. Well, you see, it's not the final shot where Benny manages to almost strike his hand right through the Infernal, but it's the lead up to that where he's on his broom, or his mop, if you want to call it that, and then we get that almost ignition. That is Yuki Sato. Another good example would be the finale with Burns versus Shinra. There are quite a few of those. I'd say that's probably my favorite moment from Sato, and one of my favorite moments in the series. It's those impact frames which I feel like they're a way of almost declaring war against the enemy. The really interesting thing about Yuki Sato's animations as well as her impact frames is that it's not something that you see too much of. If anything, if you are very into impact frames, you know that some of the most quote-unquote signature impact frames that come from animators like Yutaka Nakamura, with these very pencil-y impact frames, sometimes even switching to yellow as well. It's those sorts of things which you usually, or I personally, associate with impact frames quite a lot. But Sato's are probably as, I want to say, simple as they get. They're almost just outlines, but they're so striking because unlike, say, the impact frames of Nakamura, when you, say, have to pause the episode to really admire their detail in their fullest because they are full of pencil detail, Sato's are very simple, but simplicity cannot be dubbed for incompetence by any means. If anything, they are beautiful because they're so simple. A red flash has a lot more quote-unquote impact than a page full of small and incremental shading, in my opinion. And so Sato, for me, doesn't manage to only just push the idea when it comes to impact frames and their value and importance when it comes to fighting and combat, but they're also a lot easier to follow as well, and I think that is really what I enjoy about Sato's. Just a lot of difference versus other combat scenes which I'm used to. Also, they add a degree of unpredictability as well. I do like how they're not placed on every attack or the impact of every attack. If anything, at the beginning of the Burns fight, if we use that episode as an example, to almost ignite the fight or Shino's second attack, these impact frames are layered over each other in succession. It's these red and yellow impact frames, and then that switches to black and white, and then I think it goes to red and white, and then Shino just smears outwards in order to try and fight Burns or find another way of attacking him. And then occasionally throughout the fight we get these red and white frames from Sato, and I do again like how those are mixed in and not overused for adding that monotony which Fire Force's main attempt, I'd say, is to avoid. And so I think it's just the small differences overall which make Sato really exciting to watch. And I never really know what to expect from a Yuki Sato cut. Most of the time I don't even know when it's coming, so that level of unpredictability I think really nails what Fire Force and Yasui's direction seems to be all about. Now we have another quote-unquote flashy or high impact animator which is a bit unusual, and I say unusual not because they're not very big name, because this is probably one of the biggest names on the entire list. But it's because that they have very minimal cuts. If anything, they only have one set of cuts, and that is Nozomu Abe. If you are familiar with Ufotable Staffers, Nozomu Abe shouldn't be a new name to you because they have worked on many internet-breaking scenes. A good example would be Fate Stay Night Heaven's Feel 2, the Alt Saber vs. Berserker finale, as well as moments like Kimetsu no Yaiba episode 19, the final blow on Rui as well. That was another internet breaking moment. Abe animated that, and plenty more other things throughout Fate Stay Night and Fate Zero and the rest of it. And so on that basis, Abe doesn't need any introduction. Abe, I would say, is the epitome of extra when it comes to their cuts. So at least their quote-unquote internet-breaking ones most definitely exude extra energy. Nozomu Abe's part in Fire Force is the moment in the first OP where Shinra launches his massive attack. Probably the highlight of the entire opening. I wouldn't say it's the easiest few cuts to keep up with, but it still looks amazing, and the reason for that is probably because Abe is really, in these cuts I'd say, rather experimental, primarily with the technique which we spoke about when it comes to Yuki Sato, their use of impact frames. Similarly to Yuki Sato, I'd say that Nozomu Abe's impact frames are a lot more impactful than the quote-unquote regular impact frame, because they look very sharp. I don't really think you can define what an impact frame really is and say that this is a typical one, but at least versus the anime that I've seen, these appear as very unique because most of them are just shapes. They are shapes on screen, maybe indicating some sort of explosion or hit on impact, but they're not necessarily what a lot of impact frames which I've seen consists of, which is the character within that or the attack within that. There are a few in there, but most of them are simply just shapes. And another funny thing is that he manages to leave some of the frames blank just for the sake of creating this effect of ignition or this flashing effect. And I think that's quite effective. Again, I don't mean to bring Nakamura into this, but when we do look at Nakamura frames, often it's not really leaving frames blank, it's just contrasting the frames between each other so it looks as if they're flashing. But I find it funny how Abe does the almost literal, more logical thing it would seem, which is just not put anything there in that frame, and then contrast it with a frame with something in it and then go back to that, and then that creates the almost impression of ignition. I just still find it funny how, although Abe has very minimal time within Fire Force, as I don't believe that they have much of a commitment towards David production works as a whole anyway, they still manage to do almost exactly what I would expect of them, which is just go all out and create an insanely explosive and over-the-top scene, which is why I love Abe's cut so much. And now the final category, which I have called the situational category. This is one which I find it very hard to put into the other two categories, not because I think that there's a hierarchy between them or anything of the sort, but I think this one's quite funny because this staff member, if anything, most of their work is really based on still frames. Although there is some animation there which I'll be discussing, but most of their work is based on the art itself. And that staff member is Taiki Kono, who works on the first ending for Fire Force Season 1. They have to do the key animation for this ending, they have to do the paint, they have to do the background art. And as a result, although this is a massive workload, and with the way the industry is, massive workloads do scare me, because I do not want people to be working that hard for an industry that doesn't necessarily reward its staff members very well. But at least if we just reduce this to an artistic level, I think their talent and skill really shows at this part because of the combination and vision of all of this together. It just works so well. Taiki Kono shows a lot of intentionality when it comes to their drawing counts, and I've said it on previous podcasts, but just to reiterate, more frames does not equal better. That I hope is made obvious through these analyses, but more frames does not equal a better animation. And if anything, is how these frames are used. Every frame is utilized to create an intended effect, and the effects which said director or animation director or whoever wants to be displayed within the work. In order to match the sequence of still frames within the ending, which look very beautiful and are done by Kono themselves, Kono animates in threes. And threes is something which I've been speaking about a lot on the internet. And threes, essentially, just for a bit of animation 101, in the case of 24 FPS, means threes means one drawing for every two in-between frames, again in the context of 24 FPS. So there'll be a keyframe in-between keyframe, if you are looking at it in, say, VLC, or if you're just looking at it in a frame-by-frame player. And to make this even better, they then transition to fives, so that is one keyframe for every four in-betweens, again in the context of 24 FPS. It moves in a very jittery fashion, and that is, I think, very good for not making it seem almost polarizing. After watching a few still frames, you don't want to be rushed into a very smooth piece of animation. And considering the almost style, which looks like a traditional oil painting, it would look very wrong for this to be, say, animated in twos, or animated in ones even, which would look even more disturbing to the eyes. And then we reach the almost climax of the entire ending, and that is animated in twos. Twos is what a lot of anime is animated on. It's not only what anime is animated on, just to be clear, but that is the almost quote-unquote normal movement is often animated on twos, but that is highly subjective anyway, so don't listen to me there. But it's a much more common drawing number, and this is used for running, and its intention is to create this feeling of desperation, this run away from the entire crazy life, being at the nunnery, etc. And so this only adds to the thrill and the panic of this escape from everything which has gone on. This also ramps up the pace. When I say pace, I don't mean it in regards to cuts and edits, I just mean pace in regards to drawing counts. It ups the pace, it ups the tempo, and everything feels faster, and it's almost a bounce back to reality that Iris is living. A really beautiful thing about Taiki Kono's ending, especially this run cycle, is that what is so beautiful is that even though most of it is communicated through a silhouette, we're still able to gain a really big sense of emotion through this one run. Connor manages to compensate for the emotion almost potentially lost within a silhouette by still making sure that the horizontal movements and swaying of a run and of a run cycle is still present and can still be seen. Similarly to how one runs and your hips sway from side to side horizontally, that can still be seen within Connor's run cycle, unlike a lot of run cycles which I've seen, which again, not a criticism, but often run cycles can feel rather flat as if they're moving just across the screen, or in the case of a run cycle, in one direction. But what I really love about Connor is that the emotion is still there, because that is compensated for by the facial movements, and we're able to see that they are, or Iris is swaying from side to side, full of emotion and hesitant. I don't really know how to describe what good stumbles and bad stumbles are. I just think including stumbles just creates a lot more realism, if you want to call it that. A lot more mirroring of fear and the human experience, which is again compensated for by Connor. And so that is all our animation categories, and I do want to say that I just think Fire Force is a mind-blowing production, I think, in my opinion anyway. I think it's a great production because it brings together so many good members that are versatile in distorting these very few effects. And it shows throughout every episode, they're able to make something which we thought was rather mundane, and I think that Fire can get very mundane, but they're able to twist that and make something which is beautiful to watch every episode. And so that is the analysis for this week. Let's go to the In The Moment segment. I'll just briefly talk about one thing which I have been watching lately. If you are new to the podcast, the In The Moment segment is very simple. It's just a short moment where I talk about what I have been watching / reading as of lately. And so in this segment, I do want to talk about one film which I've actually watched, and this is a film which I never expected to almost ever watch, and that is One Piece Movie 6. One Piece Movie 6, I think, is a pretty good film. It's not my favorite film ever made, but it is my first Toei work. I have hardly, and if you were listening to last week's episode, I did talk about how I've been trying to watch anime from studios which I rarely ever do, and that included Toei, as well as Kyoto Animation and Ufotable, but this time I've finally watched a Toei work, and I didn't really have any opposition to it. It's just most of the Toei works take a lot of commitment. It's either One Piece or it's Dragon Ball or it's Precure. Okay, I could watch some Precure films, which I am intending to do, but a lot of them do take a decent amount of commitment. That's no problem. But I decided to watch a One Piece film which I didn't expect I would ever watch, and also it's one which takes minimal commitment because of the fact that I don't believe that you need to know very much about One Piece and One Piece lore in order to understand it. Overall, I liked One Piece Movie 6 more from the perspective of it as a production and as an animation as opposed to its narrative. I still think its narrative is very good, and I really do love Hosoda as a director. If you are not aware of Hosoda, Hosoda is the director for Boy and the Beast as well, and if you've seen both movies, you will definitely see the parallels between them, at least from the cinematic level, and how they're everything from the compositing. You can see how Hosoda manages to influence that a bit more. And I think it's a very decent movie. I enjoyed how, I think one thing when it comes to One Piece is that because I've never experienced it, I think the interesting thing is how you manage to, even within one movie, manage to see the connection and bond that these characters have. Every character is dependent on the personality of another. And the crew or the Straw Hats all have this very, the Straw Hats, if anything, are a character in themselves, connected and united. I really did love the multitude of animators within this, and I can't name every one of them. Some of these parts that I really love that are animated are just moments, but there was Hiroyuki Imaishi, the creator of Kill la Kill, and then we have other animators like Norio Matsumoto, the arguable legend of the Naruto verse. It's really weird seeing an animator like Norio Matsumoto if we stick on the line of animation, since this is an animation episode after all. But it really is funny seeing an animator like Norio Matsumoto on a work like One Piece, mostly because One Piece, I feel, versus Naruto has a lot more, I want to say, quote-unquote, unrealistic combat, and that isn't critical. And so seeing Norio Matsumoto still carry through his almost principles of realistic, or at least semi-realistic combat and fighting and actions and reactions, was a really beautiful thing to see him be consistent even in a film like One Piece Movie 6. To be completely honest, I don't have oodles to say about the film. I enjoyed it. Was it fun? Yes. Would I watch more One Piece films for the sake of watching them for fun? Yes, I will. And I'm intending to watch One Piece Movie Z, or Z if you want to be American about it. I will be seeing that sometime in the future, I don't know when. But it's not with the intention of getting into One Piece. I don't think I will be getting into it in the distant or near future. At least it's anime anyway. I might, maybe speaking it into existence is the wrong idea, but I might someday read the manga. But overall, I think it is rather enjoyable to watch these films even without context, and I'm going to try and do the same with some of the Bleach films, notably Bleach Hellverse, just for the sake of watching Hironori Tanaka, the amazing animator, do his part. And I also intend to maybe watch a few Precure films and some Detective Conan films too. And so that is the In The Moment segment for this week. Let's finish off briefly with some closing thoughts, and then we can wrap up the episode. So what can you take away from this episode in regards to Fire Force's animation? Firstly, a very simple point. Fire Force's animation is something which should be appreciated. It involves many very talented animators which have taken up very different strategies in order to capture a production which I'd say is a lot more challenging because it's focused around one thing. One thing can sound easier, like, oh, how can you get fire wrong? But that is the difficulty. Because this is an episode which stretches across 25 episodes plus its next season, or 24, sorry, because it spans for a rather long time anyway, for a seasonal anime, it's two curves. As a result, it can or has the potential to become monotonous. And so avoiding its monotony is something which these very talented animators have managed to do. And secondly, I would like to point out that I think that Fire Force is, yes, it is fight-oriented, but I would say that a lot of Fire Force's beauty doesn't only come out of its fight scenes, and that is also one of the reasons why I didn't mention the Netherworld arc. I do think the Netherworld arc was amazing. I think it was, although I don't watch too many Battle Shonens per year, I still think it was one of my favorite arcs in a while when it comes to seasonal Battle Shonen. But because that arc is primarily combat based, I don't think that's always the best representation of Fire Force as an anime, because it does a lot more than that. There are amazing character acting moments from the likes of Taiki Kono and the ED with tremendous attention to detail. And even animators like Hiroyuki Akagi, who's primarily, or it feels like their animations are primarily focused around making fire appear dangerous and threatening, and even just these scenes which don't involve any combat, these flashbacks and these explosions feel and build what Fire Force is. It's a world which is full of different applications when it comes to fire. And so if there was one other thing I'd love for you to take away, is that Fire Force is much more than its fights, but it's the fire as a whole and how that is portrayed by each of its animators. Thank you for listening to this episode of Gas in the Mecha. That has been episode 52. It's been really fun doing the podcast lately, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Talking about animation without visuals, I know can be a bit weird, but I still think that it's worth it to an extent. I really do love talking about this, and hopefully you guys can, even if you're not necessarily super into animation and the production, which is totally fine. Hopefully you can find some enjoyment in listening to it and getting into it, because there is some real beauty which comes out of how every moment is animated in anime, which I really want to share with you guys. I will be back next week, again talking about character acting. Have a great day, week, month. Hopefully everything is going okay with you guys, and I will see you next week. I have been your host Jamal today, and this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Difference by Chasers Gaming.